And we're back here once again with another episode of the Iron Man Podcast, episode 371. Well, with Miss Carol Brown once again. So I want to ask her this before we start going off on many other things, like we did last time you were here. But I mean, the actual first appearance you had, because people don't know, you've had three appearances total, even though this is the second appearance. So the last time you were on, you were with Andrew, which is more like a Ripperverse team thing you wanted to put together. And I was like, okay, that's fine too. I like talking to Andrew as well. Andrew always usually provides me with some great insight on things. And I can understand what he's so slowly but surely becoming a old man yelling at the clouds, actually. Because before, the first time you were on, do you remember what episode number that was?
I think it was like 147 or something.
Before that, your very first one.
No, I think the first one you had me on was like 100 or 147 or something. Because I remember being like, oh, he's got some episodes out.
Yeah. Which one was so it? The very first time you appeared on was episode 29.
Was it?
Yeah, your first appearance was last year. In episode 29, and I think that's the longest solo show I ever had.
Oh,
I
wow. Think. Does that mean
we know G? Yeah, so I think the last one you had peaked at like 2 hours and almost 2 hours and 30 minutes. That's as long as some of the panel shows that I do. But then again, what I like to do with people is, like, the reason why I do that initially in general is because if someone ever wants to hear, like, origin stories or anything like that, they can always go back and watch that first appearance. That way, they have second appearances, and I'll really go down the origin story route because, well, as people know, you don't always want to make sure you retell origin stories constantly. People don't like hearing them sometimes. They hear them once, and they're good. You get the understanding of who that person is, you know? So, actually, a lot has changed since then. So, let's start here. I know I told you that I didn't have a chance to read the Ripperverse comic books yet because I was so busy that I was going to buy them, and I was going to read and review them. I even told you this and Andrew at the time. You were here with him and we were by yourself. So when it came that I actually finally read them, because I never said I did before. Keep in mind, this, I never said I read these before. I never said that. Ever. I mean, if anyone says I did, you are a crackhead. I read them and I said they were, I liked the first book. I think I liked the first one more than the second one. People kept telling me the second one was better and I was like, I think I liked the first one more actually. You know? People were like, weren't you defending Eric in this? And I was like, hold on, wait a minute. I never said I even read these. Defending what? I defended 3D assets and all that other stuff. Because I was trying to measure, basically, if someone told you something happened, my first instinct as I've grown up to be like, show me proof of said person actually doing said thing. Because that's what proof is. You have to actually prove person did something. Because people understand, the reason why most of you guys can never go to court is because that reason right there. Most of you guys think proof is someone telling me something, so that means it's proven to you guys. What they call that is hearsay. Hearsay is not admissible in most courts, and they throw you out. They would legitimately not take that part of your case at any point. You have to tangibly prove that is what that person did. That's what I was defending. I was like, and so I argued it two ways. Let's say the person did. Who gives a fuck? What are you going to do about it? Like, what are you really going to do about it? Second of all, you can't prove this person did it, so it doesn't matter either way, you know? What was really awesome was I was reading the first book, and it had that. It was crazy how Chuck Dixon described Horseman as like you guys' first street level hero. Isn't that kind of like what Isom was in the first book? Technically, kind of was a street level hero. The first book is pretty much street level as you can get with, I guess you get superpowers attached to it too. It's really how Isom got thrown out by an even bigger black guy, and I'm like, did Eric base that guy off Tyrone Magnus? That guy's pretty huge, actually. Antoine's pretty huge, actually. Then Yaira is definitely not for Black Lives Matter. She arguably, if Isom was a human, he died. No one would survive that. Just saying. And no one human isn't going to survive that. And Isom, too, the reason why I think is, that's a weird one. Because it jumps from like being kind of like street level kind of thing with Darien kind of figuring out, trying to sound like these people out to get Isom or whatever. Then it goes from, well, we went from like kind of street level going after and trying to find out who Jasmine is and what she's going through with this black guy to, hey, now there's demons here. And now here's the tech guy. And then here's now, here's this whole big universe. Oh, here's this giant devil demon, actually. Then it just jumps to Alpha Corps. I did like Alpha Corps. I've read it probably more than the other two books, actually. Nice. Man, the art from Joe Bennett's pretty damn good. It's, I think my favorite male character so far has to be Brian Solari. I don't know. Something about that guy just sounds to me. Stern, convicted. The suit. I heard people said the suits look pretty bland. I like the green suits. I think plain and simple to the point works more than trying to be over extravagant, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, if we're talking about like suits and stuff like that, you know, we've got one person, you know, in a universe that's running around in a magician outfit, right? Hmm. We have the origin of superheroes with them wearing a onesie and their underwear on the outside, right? Like yeah. that's literally how it all starts. But I think that the design for the Alpha Corps was actually pretty much in line with like kind of like, I don't want to say like 100% with like military procedure, but they definitely mm-hmm. were going for a uniform look, right?
Yeah.
And Brian is delightfully sassy in a military way, which I always enjoy. When we were crafting that Q-It page on there, I had a little bit of a hand in that. And what I really enjoyed was all my military friends being like, you did this, you wrote this, didn't you? Because it's giving me flashbacks. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, maybe just a little bit. Yeah. But yeah, no, Brian's really good. Ingrid is really good as well. Everybody loves Braxwell. And I think the one thing that's really fun about Braxwell mm-hmm. is the fact that Braxwell just doesn't talk, right? He just never says anything. He's just like there, man of action, little words, right?
The other thing I want to bring up, I don't know if you remember this, is I think I even asked you during the show, how was Eric going to deal with these like mentally ill, retarded people that are constantly after him? All Carol guys basically said was, I think we should just ignore them. Then, towards the end of the year, Eric had a stream where he was like, you know what? I'm going to start moving differently. I'm going to just ignore all those people. I was like, I don't know if Carol had something to do with that. Because, you know, people kept saying Eric had a bunch of people full of yes men around him. And I was like, you guys ever met Carol and Andrew? You guys ever talked to Eric Weathers, actually? I think if someone would have had the nerve to call Carol and Andrew yes men, I implore it. Legitimately, just speak to them. Actually, and you'll be like, now that's the furthest thing you will actually come to a conclusion as you're in your brain, actually. Because I remember you saying that, and I was like, you know what? That is the most effective, easy way. Just kind of just let them scream into the void of nothingness and act like their opinions don't matter, you know?
Well, I mean, I actually just sent this message to somebody on Twitter before mm-hmm. we went live because we were talking about like people being angry for like nothing reasons, right? Yeah. And I think part of what's going on is that anger is kind of like a natural stimulant, right? Like when we get angry, our heart starts to beat and our thoughts become more clear, eyes get dilated and all this other stuff. And people at that point feel really alive and they feel very animated and they become addicted to that. And so in some ways they're looking for reasons to start fights with folks or have a confrontation. And I'm not like, and I wouldn't even say that they're doing it intentionally. It's like, there's just something at like that subconscious level where it's like, I need to fight somebody. Now I know I want to fight people. Like I know it. I just make sure I do it like in a controlled area. Right. Digressing back to your one point about yes men, nobody at Ripperverse is a yes man. In fact, we've all gotten into it with Eric, like on a couple different things. And, sometimes Eric listens to us and sometimes Eric's like, no, we're going to do it my way. And you know, he's the boss. Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. He's black yeah. and he's the boss. That's kind of a double whammy too. And people were calling you guys racist. And I was like, okay, guys, think about it this way. Why would racist white people want to, I don't know, in their life go, you know what? I'm going to work for a black guy.
Yeah, that's weird. And yeah. I get a lot of hugs from Brandon. So that would be extra weird. So
I was like, so let's say she was a self-hating white lady. So, some of you guys, to come to your conclusions, I would have to legitimately gaslight myself into believing you believe what you're actually saying is true. Because there are people kept saying like there's all these white supremacists in comic books. Yeah, guys, a bunch of white supremacists who wear Klan outfits go to the local comic book shops and buy Black Panther comic books for themselves. More about, they buy Black Panther omnibuses too. Like, no, no one's doing that. That's not happening. You're just mentally insane.
Yeah, no, that's a lot of projection there. They just are looking for something to hate and they'll do whatever justification they need to in order to kind of make that ends meet so it makes mm-hmm. sense in their brain. And, you know, on one hand, you know, I guess I can understand it. Like on days I want cake, I pretend like calories don't exist. So like, that's the same thing, right?
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the last time we talked, we were on Isom 2. That had just wrapped mm-hmm. up, I think. Mm-hmm. Alpha Corps hit. Alpha Corps actually did very, very well. Actually, I checked the Ripperverse YouTube channel, and Alpha Corps is the highest viewed videos in general. Mm-hmm. One of the highest viewed ones. Yeah, I mean, the trailer really was good. And I get it. I understand, guys. I fully get it that the animated stuff costs a lot of money. So I kept telling people, I don't know what got into your guys' heads that thinking that animation was somehow lesser than live action because you can't see the actual people. Mm-hmm. Whoever told you that is an idiot. I get it. I think this is the sentiment. People probably think of like anime is like cartoon, it's like for kids. So I think it's just cheaper by default. It's like that's not how life works. Just because something is for kids doesn't mean it's cheaper. Okay. Like I imagine the Daily Wire was spending a lot of money on their kids' content because it's animated. There's a lot of things you gotta do to make animation look the way it does. Have, no, did I have DVDs growing up? Like animated movie DVDs where you were seeing how it was made? I did. A lot of work. So how did you feel about the live action attempt? Because obviously you get to hear all this information anyway, because you're like second in command, arguably. So when you first heard the idea of it, what were you thinking about that?
I was actually pretty excited about it because, I mean, that's the Socio Sisters, you know, wheelhouse, right? And I've never really gotten the chance to kind of see like a work in progress like that. So I was kind of slightly abusing my access to things just so I could watch like the phases of how it happened. And there is so much work that goes into all of that. Like, for example, like when Avery falls and like hits the car, right? Yeah, they didn't just drop Bro onto the car. First, they had to like do like the actual, they had to do a couple of cuts. And one of them was when they dropped something onto the car to make it do like the impact thing. And then they did a couple of drops with the actor. And one of them was when he had like the safety harness and stuff on. So they had to CG that out, right? Because you don't see it. And it's just so many little tiny things like that. And what I thought was really fun, it was like, it was actually really cold out there, right? And so everybody like had their breath, like their, not their breath, I'm sorry, had their breath like fogging out in front of them, right? And so they were kind of making that go away too. And another thing that a lot of people don't take into account when it comes to live action that I guess animation has a little bit more grace on is you have to deal with the sun, right? So you're under like this big time constraint to get it right, like, you know, at that particular time, because if you fuck up on day one, you have to come back on day two. And if you're training, well, guess what? Now you're fucked some more because you need that particular weather condition, right? So it was like a morbid curiosity for me to kind of watch everything go from the recording, the stunts, the readings, adding in like the special effects and stuff like that, because those are in there, and then listening to like the soundtrack getting added to it, like and there's so much work that goes into it that I think a lot of people who don't have access to that understanding take it for granted. Same thing with animation, like what you're talking about, like animation does cost a pretty penny. In fact, a lot of the animes that people really enjoy, they don't just come from one studio, they usually come from four, and they have them all working on different episodes so that way they can all come out in a timely manner, or people have to go back to waiting for a year for 12 episodes, right?
Like we even seen it recently now with Invincible, like the hype for that is suddenly kind of, you know, dwindling off because the animated episodes keep taking all these long extended breaks, and by the time it comes back, it's just interest is not there. And I guess the problem with the animation is people said you have to draw the characters. Like I think people really actually are so just, man. It reminds me, like, I don't know if you ever consume, like, sports enough. It's, like, the thing with sports fans are, like, they only care about what's on the screen. They do not care about the actual making of the actual product.
Well, I mean, some folks do. Like, I ran into somebody who was really into sports, and, like, she's got, like, scorecards for every player and where they came from and, like, their training regimen and stuff like that. Like, that's definitely something for her. Like, when I watch hockey, I just want to watch guys beat each other up and, like, shrug off, like, a cut they've got on their eyebrow and things like that. So, yeah.
Oh God! So, it's and then after that we had where the Yaira campaign is at right now, which is $1.2 million. It should be almost at 1.3. That's crazy how she actually ended up beating Aisan's record in record time. Wasn't even in the 30 hours. It was actually a 6 hour advance time too. And what's also interesting, people didn't bring up as a narrative regarding the $1 million campaigns. You know, Eric should just get like 4 trophies, and you do have the whole Tom Brady thing of like my rings. That'd be the greatest meme I think you guys could do. Just if he's listening, just make that happen, please. That would be so funny. It's just for haters' sake, you know. It's crazy. People forget it's easy to do it with Aisom, easy so to speak, right? Because that's the flagship character the company launched with, so there's like a lot of recognizable face with that. But to do that with two different characters, not only just one the same year, for Aisom 2 and Alpha the same year, Harrison in 2024, it's like that's $4 million campaigns in like the span of like not only just three and a half years. That's two different characters in that too. Like that's just impressive. No matter how anyone would try to slice it, that's incredible. Because you know, as Eric mentioned, you and those two used by comics. I know Andrew's probably watching the Chinese comics. It's really hard to get people returning for new people. That's a really hard thing. I mean, you're a writer. It's you said before, last time you heard, it's really hard to get people to be interested in a new idea. So, like, let's use, I know you said you started off with, like, romance, right?
Well, I started off with urban fantasy and horror, and then I did romance more as a guilty pleasure. So, like, I knew when I went into it, I had, like, so with marketing, there's blue ocean, there's red ocean. And the difference is that in a red ocean, it means that you have a lot of competition. So the blue ocean means that you're doing the one thing that nobody else is doing, right? So romance is nothing but red ocean. Like, it's just, you know, if you think you've got a unique concept, I'm sorry, I hate telling you this, somebody else has already thought about it, right?
And doing it at that moment. And at that moment, their book's probably already getting published too, so you're already behind.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because I know you said you had started out with, you know, horror, and then you went to doing romance, and it's like, well, the audience you had that's interested in hearing you write, or sorry, reading you write about, like, horror and all that stuff, those are, let's just say for arguments, if you had, like, 30 people, which is great in general if you did. Well, then again, if even five of those people won't even come and read your romance stuff, that's kind of a lot, because people, as you know, marketing, conversion rates are some of the hardest things to pull off, right? Yeah. Like, when Eric, say, like, not any bigger content creator, like, whenever they go, like, hey, I'm streaming on, like, I don't know, remember back in the day, they used to be like, I'm streaming on Twitch for, like, after this video. How many of those people really, of them that were subs to them, actually went to Twitch and followed them on Twitch? It's like, that's really hard to all creators struggle with this. Everyone does. The comic industry that has been around for ages still struggles with this, you know? So I'll ask you, like, since you've gotten people to be interested in your work, even though you've been doing other genres, how did you get people to be interested in that stuff?
You know, it's the truth of the matter is that they have to be interested in you as the creator right now, because when I was growing up, it was about, like, you know, when I read, like, The Subtlety Knife, right? I didn't know anything about the author, and I didn't really care about the author. I just wanted to be entertained for a little while, right? And then I was dumb because I realized that I was actually reading the second book of the series, but I hadn't figured that out until, like, the end of the second book. And that's when I went and looked up the rest of his stuff, and I ended up finishing the entire series. And even then, the only reason I looked up that author was because I was trying to find his other works. I wasn't going to his website or looking into who he was as a person, because back in the 1990s, authors didn't have their own websites, right? And so they weren't really advertising their personal brand that way. But as more time has gone on and technology has developed, and it's been a lot easier for people to get a hold of, you know, you as a creator, you know, people want to ask those questions, right? They want to know the person behind the words that they enjoyed, and if that's somebody that they want to be more associated with. So the reason I was able to get people interested in my work is because I try to depict myself as somebody that was guaranteed to entertain them, somebody that was wholesome enough that they would want to associate and follow. And then obviously, I had to kind of walk my talk, right? Like, if I wrote a book, I had to publish the book, and I had to be ready for whatever feedback came with that book. And most of the feedback, with the exception of, like, a couple of them have been really good. I think I've only ever gotten 1-star review, and I got the 1-star review from somebody who didn't even read the book. He read the sample chapter and made up his own conclusions about how the book would end, and then that was what he posted. And on Amazon, they ended up taking that down because he wasn't a verified purchaser, but he, like, threw it on Goodreads too. So it's on there if anybody wants to read it.
So everyone doesn't know, you're a big person into writing, actually, author. So how's that been coming along? Do you feel like you picked up any, like, new tricks since last time we talked?
I've gotten a lot more consistent with my routine, for sure. I haven't been able to work on my own projects lately because I've actually been opened myself up to contract work. So with contract work, I'm either editing somebody else's stuff, or I'm currently ghostwriting a big project right now. Yeah, and the ghostwriting has actually been probably the one thing that I've learned the most from, not because I'm having to relearn how to write or anything like that, but because one of the things I wanted to do when I started working with this particular client was I wanted to make sure that I was kind of honoring, like, the vision and the intention of the story that they wanted to show. And I asked them if they could like give me three books that they were thinking about when, you know, they were working on this particular story idea. And so I went and I read those books that they recommended to me. And then I researched those authors because they all have like their own writing craft book. And I really enjoy kind of like the methodology that other people go through in their writing. So one author that I ended up reading, he's all big about like not describing sound, but kind of having like almost a sound effect in the writing. So instead of saying the cell phone rang, he would put like ding, 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 like in there as like the break for the sound. And his pacing was really good. And then another author who I ended up like researching way too much on, because he had like access to like things and that were in the manuscript where I was like, how do you know that? Like, where did you, like, did you serve in the military? Like, who are you? Right. And what I thought was really interesting with him was that he was just like a hobbyist. Like he really liked to read like true crime stuff. Right. And when he was doing true crime and writing true crime, he got to talk to detectives and learn like all the, like the stuff that goes on the inside and things like that. So I thought that was really, kind of eye-opening. Made me want to go talk to like my local police department, but I don't want to be on the list either. So I'm like,
oh, yeah. Imagine, because people like during nowadays, white and talking to the police. I don't know if that would really work out for a lot of people.
I don't know. Yeah. And then I like come in and be like, yeah, like hypothetical, I'm going to write like this murder scene. But so like, how could I get away with it? Right. Like that's just not going to fly.
I probably won't really go over too well. Holy crap. Now Brandon did it. Don't know. You know, he's black. We get away with things nowadays. That's just saying, you know? Oh, goodness gracious. So, another thing I wanted to ask is, since you said you're going over other people's work, are you finding it to be, like, eye-opening in terms of, like, things that you're going to later on improve on from your own, or is just, these are just good experiences to have?
I really like the ideas that people have, and in some cases, when I'm, like, reviewing the work and I'm giving them feedback, it's more like, so first off, anytime you edit somebody's work, no matter what you're doing, you have to understand that you're holding somebody's baby, right? And if you go over and take a sticker and you slap it on a baby and it says like retarded on it or stupid or something like that, like the parent holding the baby is going to have some thoughts and feelings on that. And when you want to navigate feedback and critiques like that, you have to kind of like hold that in mind. Now, there's been a couple of folks where I like, look, I don't know how to say this nicely, so I'm just going to say it. And I come out and I say it. But in some cases, I'm kind of like, you got a really great idea here and I just want to help you polish it. And this thing you got right here, it got to go. Like, it's just not working. So I think what I've learned there is kind of like getting a feel for the clients that I work with and making sure I'm communicating with them in a way that both they're receptive to and that will actually work on the manuscript. Because at the end of the day, even though I'm getting paid to do the editing and stuff like that, it's still like this work of art that they want to put out there. And I want to help them make it as best as they can. But I don't really like, I don't want to like soft punch it either. Because the thing is, like, yeah, if I don't point out problem areas or places of refinement, a reader is going to hook onto that real fast, especially if they don't like that person as well. Like, you know, how many people like come after Eric for like little tiny things, right? It's kind of like, oh, you know, he touched Jasmina, therefore he's causing assault. And I was like, no, he's not.
Yeah, because people don't understand is when a consumer is giving their money to somebody, they trust you. And if you burn them, they don't want to give your money to you anymore. Mm-hmm. And when that person is going to eventually read whatever book you're going to be doing that for, and they go like, well, whoever did the process for this didn't catch this, that's going to be a problem for them. Like, mm-hmm. Guys, people find issues with the littlest of things, like just in general, you know? So you're part of that process to make sure you're delivering a quality product. And that's why people, I don't know, where is this thing of like my quality? It's like, no, the process of making it should be a quality thing because you want to deliver a quality product to the point where when you get it, you can tell it's a quality product. It's like, people keep saying I have to wait for quality. It's like, that's such a stupid thing. Like, you talk like an NPC. Like, in theory, when you're doing something, whenever I do anything, I'm thinking like, I'm going to put my best foot forward with it instantly. Like, those videos that people see that I do on my YouTube channel, I take about like 10 takes doing them because I want to make sure I'm delivering the best presentation, the best way I can speak about a topic. That's how you put in quality. You take time doing it, and then when you see the final end result, you see a quality product or not a quality product. It's going to be all subjective anyway. But the thing, you want to wait for quality is kind of stupid, because you, I would hope the creator is putting in quality in general from just making it. I wouldn't hope someone's completely phoning it in, or someone just running it down. Someone's completely sprinting it. Like, I hope someone sprints their freaking production of a book. I hope one does that.
No, I don't think. Well, like, I guess it depends on like what you're doing and where you're at. Like, if we're talking about sprinting, right? There's a couple people who do what's referred to as fast drafting. I'm talking about literature. I'm not talking about comics, because that workflow is completely different. But I know that with literature, there's a couple, like, and I've done fast drafting as well. Like, one of my books, Roll D20 for Love, that was a fast draft book. I wrote it like in a week, but it took me 3 months to have it completely edited. Right. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just kind of like a publish it and put it out kind of model thing. But there are authors. I think her name is Hope Ford. Mm-hmm. And Hope Ford will write one short story a week. She'll edit it herself and then she'll put it out there. And even when people are like, I don't like the spelling errors in here, she's like, whatever. Right. And then she just writes another and puts it out there. Like that's a model that works for her. It doesn't really work for me, because if I find out there's like a typo or something in there, there's like a formatting issue, like I have to fix it. Like I can't just leave it. And, you know, on that note, when I encounter like somebody who's part of my process and I'm kind of like, you gave me a lackluster result, you know what? I'm not coming back. Right. Mm. Like there was a book formatter, and at one point when I was working with him, I was like, hey, I've got like this short story. I was wondering if I could get you to format it for me for these different platforms. And he's like, oh yeah, it's going to cost $150. And I was like, $150 for a short story? Like, I'm not, no. That's not happening. I'm going to figure out how to do this on Word now. Have a nice day.
So how do you feel the indie scene, as far as all that, is getting a bit better? You know, like the Iron Age and stuff like that. Because I think when we last talked, the Iron Age thing was kind of starting to pick up a lot of steam, and people disingenuously trying to not understand what it was. This is what I feel like happens to a lot of people. They know what things mean. They're not that, if someone's that stupid, you probably shouldn't be interacting with anybody at that point. I think people know what they're saying. They're just deliberately trying to present it in a different way just to get, I don't know, whatever, engagement, retweets, whatever people's dopamine hits are, honestly. Because it was very clear what this stands for. It was very clear what it meant. So you can't take it out of context of something that's very clear. Independent people, just like me and you, doing their own thing. It's pretty straightforward. It's there's not some secret encryption at the bottom of the cereal box, you know.
To answer your question, I think it's actually it's doing pretty well, and a lot of people may not see that because they're too busy kind of. They're in the wrong side of the pool, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So, and you know, at this point, like I've honestly, like I've muted a lot of the more troublesome folks, right? Because, you know, they scream the loudest, and that's really not what I want to see or engage with. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I realized that when I did that was that I found a lot of other indie creators that were actually thriving really well, but nobody was seeing or hearing them over like the garbage, right?
Yeah.
You know, A Drink with Crazy does a really good job of showcasing independent works that come out on Wednesday. So he's got a show that he does every Wednesday on his channel where he goes over like the indie projects that are coming out or are out right now. And then he has his viewership place a vote on which one is the winner for the week. Eric Weathers actually was nominated twice in a row that week because people really love the concept of Battle Brick Road very much. So I thought that was really cool. And when I was talking to Blaine Pardo told me something that I thought was actually pretty profound, even though like on the surface, I was struggling with it a little bit. But he said, if creators all supported each other, we would not be poor. Right. Which was to say that, you know, every time one of our friends published something, if we would go out and spend the $20 to buy their product, right, then they would be able to make their own quotas. And, you know, he told me that and I was like, you know what? Yeah, he's absolutely right. And so every time somebody in my circle comes out with something, I always put something in it. And it's
I've been tackling to your point. You know what also would help if people to do? Mm-hmm. Review it. Because have you ever went to a website? I'm that kind of person where I would check the reviews now at this point. I'm getting older, so I'm more cautious about stuff. Yeah. If someone layers out a detailed review, that almost could be like the nail in the coffin for the purchase, though. But if no one's reviewed it, you just want to make sure you guarantee that person gets a sale. Like, talk about it, to be like, hey, I got my book. I thought it was pretty good. This is what I liked. This is what I didn't like. That could be the nail in the coffin to get a person to buy the book, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I would always encourage a review. Like, I'm an author. I love reviews. Like, I literally will sometimes have to go to, like, a website that has, like, review places and be kind of, like, mm-hmm. have a petition to, like, put my name in there, right? And you're absolutely right. People will read reviews. Now, they can be a little tricky, especially if you're talking about places like Goodreads, because Goodreads has, like... So the downside about a place like Goodreads is that they don't do verified purchases, right? So I told you about the guy that gave my book a 1-star, and on Amazon, they took it off because they could verify he didn't buy it, but on Goodreads, they didn't care, right? So occasionally what will happen is you will get a mob that will go and hate bomb something. Like, we kind of saw it on Rotten Tomatoes when certain films would come out, right? Which is why they claimed that they had to go in there and put like that verified watch thing on there. And if, and that kind of goes, again, I don't like saying mob mentality, but if you get enough of like a bandwagon together for or against a certain project, some people won't even question it. They're like, my entire community doesn't like this book, therefore I will not like this book. And in some cases, they won't go through the process to do due diligence and verify what it is that's being said. And let's see, I think it was 19 or 18, don't quote me on the year there, but there was a book that came out, it was called Blood Air, and it was a middle grade book, and it was written by an Asian American. She literally had just come over from her country of origin, and she wrote this book, and she was having it go through the beta reading stage. So, or was it beta reading, or was it the ARC review? I think it was the ARC review. Either way, one of the people who was part of the team that reads and reviews the book broke the agreement. By what they did was they took a picture of a page of a passage that she wrote, and they posted it on Twitter completely out of context with the intention of trying to say that the author was like glorifying slavery and showcasing some other stuff. And like literally was just using all the trigger words at the time to like send everybody, you know, after this poor lady. And it worked because everybody got really upset by the one paragraph, but if you had actually read the chapter and the connecting paragraphs around it, then the impact, you know, of not having it out of context would have been taken away, right? But nobody questioned it. Nobody, you know, was kind of like, wait, hold on. It wasn't until like other ARC readers were like, no, that's not how that happened. You're messing it up. But by the time they come out and say something, the damage is done. And the author at that time said, like, I want to take my book down. I want to reread it because if this is true, I don't want this to be out there in the world. And she spent 3 months rereading and doing some soul searching. She's like, okay, let's just go ahead and put it out there because this one lady, she crackhead, right? That she didn't use that exact language, but that was pretty much it. So.
Mm. And when I was looking at John's channel, I think John's channel does a really good job of showcasing like indie fantasy, mm-hmm. as you would call it. Royce's channel is really good for that. I was thinking about doing the same, a similar thing of like a comic shop thing like that. Because it just showcases what other people are doing, honestly. Because that's the thing with people, is that if you don't actually put it on the screen to their face, they legitimately won't see it. That's how most average people are. They're like, because most people, I understand guys, are like at work. They're like, probably have their earphones in. They're probably at a desk with their earphones in. They're not really actually looking at whatever video you're doing. They're hearing what your video is, actually. Mm-hmm. So, you know, putting it in front of them in a presentation form and showing them, hey, this is a legitimate thing. Go and support it if you want to, because, you know, it's always want to tell the audience you can support it. You don't have to. It's always a great thing to do it, you know, because I know last year there was this like big thing on entitlement versus like bigger creators helping people out. What I found.
Really that was like a
God of the year. God, man, that was just a rabbit hole of just nonsense. I was like, some of you sound like entitled communists right now.
Yeah, I even did like a small poll on my channel because I was like, I don't understand this. Can like somebody explain this to me? And all the people who were like, well, it would be nice if bigger creators would give a shout out to us. Like, you know, I went and kind of snooped on them a little bit. Right. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those channels who were like, I need somebody to give me a lift me up. Like, I'm sorry. They weren't interesting. Right. They weren't doing anything new. They weren't, you know, presenting mm-hmm. content that people would have enjoyed. So, you know, these individuals that were creating something, you know, to be viewed and digested, we're doing it in a way that was already saturated, right? So when you come out with a saturated product or a concept or whatever branding that you have, don't be surprised if people are like, nah, I'm not feeling it, right? Like, I've already seen this like 10 times. I don't want to see it again. Unless you can put a spin or you can sell it. And if you can't do that, then running around after other people saying, I just need you to give me a shout out so that way I can feel better about myself. Because if that person does a shout out and you make like a trash product, right? well, people are going to be like, I can't trust that person to give, you know, me recommendations anymore because, you know, they're just kind of, they're shilling, right? Yeah. So, I mean, there's the credibility that's involved there too.
The other thing to tackle to your point is Ryan Cannell brought this up on Friday Night Tights. He brought up exactly what I was thinking. Weird how great minds think alike. Crazy. When, even if you, let's say you get as big doing what you're doing and you're, and you tell people, hey, I recommend, which is myself for an example, I recommend his show. There is no one direct conversion to say that every single person that is going to like your post or retweet it is going to come over here and follow. There's like, maybe if you did it once and you were, and the, your channel is so astronomically bigger than mine, it'll have some level of a difference. The one time it might work. But when you do it like 3, 4, 5 times, well, everyone that would have already subscribed or followed already did it once. They already kind of know who that person is. Man, that's really bad in the Yu-Gi-Oh! Community where I first come from. People are like, oh, I want a shout-out from this bigger creator. Random shout-outs in videos mean nothing, actually. And no one wants to hear that when they're trying to listen to someone's newest video. Like, that type of stuff, like, most of that stuff is for, like, the end of the video, and most people, by that point, have already moved on to the next video, actually. That comes from a lot of smaller people. I just noticed that. It's just, oh, and people gotta wonder why their campaigns don't do as well the next time around. Because, what you just mentioned there, it's artificially propped up. It's propped up by someone else. The next time when you think, like, oh, these are, like, genuine people that want to support me, well, it's not really the case there. They kind of only did it because they were asked to, essentially, by another bigger person with more influence. I just always tell people, if you want to get to that point where someone does shout out your work, you need to put in the actual work yourself. Some days, you're going to hate it. Some days, you're going to think about quitting. Some days, you're going to think about, is the grass greener on the other side? Maybe I shouldn't be doing this. But then you don't. Most people don't. They just keep doing what they're doing. You know, but I think voicing your concerns is fine. But there's days where you don't want to do it. There's days where it's going to be hard. No one said every day is going to be perfect. You know?
Yeah. It's always a struggle in some shape or form.
Good Lord. Ugh. So I knew back then, your first episode, you said you were a teacher. Do you still have, like, you know, any idea of what that would be like in a different world? Let's say there was an Earth 2.
If I was still teaching?
Yeah, because teaching
now would have gotten fired.
I remember last time you said you were teaching, there was a bunch of delinquent kids you had to look after, or one of them was really bad.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, yeah, a little... Sorry, I'm trying to like condense all of that into like one sentence. I did work with, you know, a troubled demographic. That's the appropriate verbiage I'm supposed to use with that. And, you know, in some cases it was, you know, they come from troubled families themselves, or they come from neglected families, and they're just looking to find, you know, a community that they can be part of. One of the big things that I don't think people really kind of zoom in on with when it comes to children is that when they are very young, they're very kind of herd focused. And it's the first herd that they're attached to is the family herd, right? You know, that's why when we're kids, all we think about is mom, dad, grandma, you know, fight with my sibling kind of thing, right? And then as we enter into the teenage years, we move away from family herd into friend herd. You know, our priorities shift. We really care about what our friends are doing, how they're doing it, what are they wearing, what are they talking about? Like, I want to be with that herd. And, you know, as adults, then we become like, sometimes we become pack leader, sometimes we just find a different herd to go follow and be part of, right? And that urge to be part of something when people are children, you know, it's really strong. And in some cases, you know, they'll fall in line with a herd that like might want to sell firearms or narcotics or something like that. And one student that was on my caseload, I had to go talk to the on-site police officer about, because when he was given over to me, I took one look at him. I was like, bro, got 3 phones and 2 backpacks. Like, I got a lot of questions right now, right? Yeah. And so I went and, you know, I was like, hey, I'm his case manager, and I just need to know, you know, are you keeping eyes on him? And he was like, yeah. I was like, okay, that's all I need to know. Like, I didn't, because if it's not in the file, then that's pretty much all I can ask, because then they start like accusing you of having like a bias or something like that. But they didn't have to accuse me, because, you know, they caught it. And, you know, at one point when we had a meeting about, you know, about him, I was kind of like, hey, I'm a little concerned that he might be, you know, an endangerment to his peers and the staff. And I'd like to talk about relocating him to a different facility where they can probably suit his needs a little bit more. And what I mean when I say that is that this kid would just get up and leave school, right? Like, he would just like, and you can't really stop them, and you're not supposed to hold on to the students, right? Like, you don't make contact.
Yeah.
That's
the thing with also being a woman, is like, girls have this unnatural infinity towards emotion And then when you present someone that's dead, girls do that whole thing of like, Eve, like I can fix him. That's always a girl thing. They're always do. I can do it. Hey, honey, he might have murdered 5 people in like 2 hours. No, but he's got good in him. It's like, no, that's an anime thing. That's not real life. He's not changing, you know?
Yeah. No, I know what you're talking about there. Yeah. No, they still do that. They still kind of like, oh, hey, bad boy, I can fix him. And then when they fix him, it's like, okay, well, I'm going to dump you and get a different bad boy.
Yeah, that's not going to make him feel better.
No, it's not. He's gonna go back to being hurt and confused. But yeah, and we ended up not transferring that student, not because, you know, my concerns weren't acknowledged, but because the district didn't want to pay like the $9,000 to have him transfer to that school. And, you know, I was like, I just wanted on record that I asked to have him moved, and, you know, they put it on record. And 2 weeks later, he got suspended because he brought a firearm to school with the intention of, you know, deleting 2 kids. And when we had another meeting about that, I brought it back up that I was like, hey, I asked to, you know, go ahead and start the process to have him relocated. And, you know, somebody didn't want to pay $9,000. And they're like, well, that's not relevant. And I was like, it is relevant because to you guys, 2 children were worth $9,000. So I really want us to all walk away from this meeting knowing that. Just, so
the old saying of like, everyone has a price. If you're putting $9,000 on a kid, guys, the joke is there's no price on people's life. You get one of those. There's no actual price, actually. Mm-hmm. But if people are thinking, hey, $9,000 to a public school, or at first you said it was a public school, right? Or was it a private school?
Yeah, it was public.
Which is little as you know of government, they give you money to stay alive. You're gonna have money.
Can't tax you if you're dead.
That's true. You know, it's one thing that's certain in life, living, death, and then taxes. They'll always be a thing.
Yeah, but but digressing back to your original question, I probably would have gotten fired because I really like towards the, I resigned because the environment for teachers, it was bad to the point where like we weren't helping each other. And I was like, you know, I'm not going to be in an abusive relationship. So I left.
Do you have like flashbacks thinking back, like, you know, did I make the right decision or could I have made it better at any point if I just stuck it out longer?
You know, sometimes I feel really bad because like I loved my kids. I really did. And they were all good souls, except for that one that I wanted to have transferred. Yeah. But even he wasn't like, even like, if you asked me if he was evil, like I've only met one kid where I was like, that kid's got the devil in him. Right. Mm-hmm. But most of them are really good. And they're needy. And they just, like I said, they're looking for that herd, that pack for them to belong to. And sometimes I wish I had like the mental fortitude to have stuck that out for them. But like, you know, and sometimes you have to sit there and do like, you know, the T-chart thing, right? Pros, cons, staying teacher, not staying teacher. And every now and then, if I get like that big regret thing, I pull, like, you know, I make another T-chart and I go through it again. And it's just never been worth it to me. Like, even like I moved, right? Like I moved from Arizona to go to Florida, and that actually would have reset one of my loan forgivenesses because I wasn't doing it in a high need state, or they would have just tacked that onto my existing student loan and stuff like that. I got to pay it anyway, but that would have been like a thing. Like I should have just stayed in a sucky place because I didn't want to pay back like $5,000 of my student loan. Like it's not worth it to me. So, but I guess I try to mediate that a little bit because I do a little bit of teaching on my channel, and then I get to like work with creatives and I get to kind of use like some of those teaching skills and models with them a little bit. So that helps.
Remember, because also people forgot from the last time you were on, the very first time, you were an Army kid as well. You thought to yourself, like, another life, what if you had, like, joined the Army, actually, or Air Force, or Marines, or...
Oh, but I did.
Yeah, I remember, yeah. So, you remember, you ever thought about just, like, what could have happened if you stuck out with it, actually?
You know, I probably would have gone career. The whole reason for anybody who doesn't know, the whole reason I ended up not becoming career was because I had messed up my knees to the point where I couldn't keep up with fitness standards. Even now when I run, like I have to pay the price afterwards, right? But when you're talking about the military, you always have to be in like some kind of like combat ready thing. You can't like just run and be like, okay, I need like 5 days off because I can't run now. Like that doesn't work. I don't know what I probably would have changed my job when I was in there because the one I had was just like the 9-to-5 and I did it because it was 9-to-5. But like at the end of the day, I probably would have gone into something like intelligence or something else, like a little bit more proactive and not reactive. Mm-hmm. That would have been more of my thing. The AFSC that I wanted to go into, or the job, sorry, that I wanted to go into was actually on-site engineer for Pablo helicopters. But the whole reason I ended up not selecting that one was because they told me that it was going to take like 2 years to do the degree. And then they were going to retire the aircraft in 3 years. So I would have gone through 2 years of school to do my job for 1 year. And then I would have to find another job anyway. So I was like, yeah,
probably schooling not. Is such a scary. Oh, God, man. I hate stories like that because they almost try to just scam you out of 2 years of your life. People have done 2 years. That's like a long time in life. But it's like, that's a lot of time to sit there doing something to only do it for a year just to have it taken away from you because reasons. It's like, have you seen all those videos recently of like all these women that say university is a scam, college is a scam, I was lied to and I was tricked? And people, whenever people have stories like that, I know there's a lot of younger guys who watch. I check the analytics for the shows. Okay, I put on like podcast platforms. Anyone's young, listen to this right now. Whatever school teachers tell you, whatever officials tell you, make sure you look into the information yourself, because at school they have you do research for projects, right? Okay, so take that research with things that they also say regarding like college, universities. Don't just do something because you feel like you have to do it because everyone else is doing it. That's mm-hmm. not how you succeed in life for the most part, you know? Well, actually look into things and understand what things mean to you and understand what the impact could be. That's what I was always told young people, you know?
Yeah. So to your point, the reason that high schools tell students to go to college is because that school gets a kickback. That's why.
Oh, it's always something there. Huh?
Yeah.
You told me that government schools weren't doing it out of the kindness of their own heart.
What? No, they get a kickback from the government for every kid that goes and registers and stays in for a year. So naturally they're like, oh yeah, we like money. So go small child. And sometimes like they, like I said, I would have gotten fired because I gave kids like advice that they were like, oh, well, I don't know if you should have said that. And I was like, I really don't care. But when I worked, like the demographic I worked with, like some of them were like very low functioning special needs, right? And so at one point, like, and some of them are kind of, and when I mean low functioning, I mean like, and you know, they were like, okay, so we're going to go ahead and put him on track to go to college. And I was like, what is he going to go study? And it's like, oh, he'll find himself when he goes there. And I was like, you're asking him to go 8K in debt. Like, can we talk about this? You know, and at one point, like, I remember I talked to his mom and I was like, do you really want him to go to college? And she's like, no. And I was like, Timmy, do you want to go to college? And he's like, no.
Yeah, that's the thing is, one of my friends, one of the people that I used to talk to, I don't talk to him that much anymore, not because I don't like him, he went to University of Riverside out here in California for like a year after he graduated. It was like 24 some odd K or a semester, something like big number, and he just saying that family just did not have the money to do it, just justify the price tag. It's like, people want you to, this is the way that I think about it, you get all those years of free school from public school. Mm-hmm. So they kind of feel like they're owed that money if they send you off to the bigger ones where you have to pay. It's mm-hmm. somewhere like you're paying back not just a debt. You're technically paying off a debt they gave you for free from the public schools, actually. Mm-hmm. That's what I kind of always thought it would be.
Yeah, the whole system needs to be teared down. Like, I say that as somebody who was in it, right? The whole thing needs to be torn down, and everybody needs to go back to homeschooling their kids for a while. Like, absolutely serious. But, and that was something that was wild for me because, like, when 2020 happened, right, like, obviously nobody was going to school. And on the block that I lived at, there was, like, a group of moms, and they were just kind of like, screw this. I'm not doing this remote schooling anymore. It's not working for my child. And so what they would do is that they would send their kids to, you know, the other parent's house to do certain subjects, right? So they go over to one lady's house for history, another one for math, one for literature, one for, you know, extracurricular activities, which was usually them, like, screaming in the backyard because she had a trampoline, right? And I think when we're also talking about, like, so the one of the things that's kind of crazy to me is when I hear, like, these crazy teacher stories that come out where they're like, yeah, I'm going to teach your kid how to enjoy pride and all this other stuff. Like, in the places that I worked at, they were very clear about, like, you don't talk religion, you don't talk, you know, politics, you don't talk any of these hot topics. Like, your job is to come in there, teach them algebra, and get the fuck out, right? When I hear about these public schools that have, like, these teachers that are showcasing this stuff, I'm like, what is going on? Because, like, these are not your children, right? Like, you may get attached to, you may get attached to them, you may see them cry, you may, like, be there in, like, their moments of comfort, but they are not yours. You do not get to do what you want with them.
So. Yeah, that's the thing, is for some reason, whatever these teachers are now, they just think like they're some sort of like anime mentor to your kid so they can just teach your kid just anything or talk to them in any certain way. It's like, you're talking to someone who's probably like half the mental capacity you are, you know? Mm-hmm. And kids are, you know, there's a saying, kids are impressionable, or people growing up are just impressionable. You make a bad impression on them, I'm just saying, whatever their life turns out to be later on when they think of what you said to them, it's kind of on your fault. And the thing mm-hmm. is, no one sees that as weird. Like, Eric was talking to Organized Chaos about that thing he was saying about having, like, kindergartners get taught, you know, about gay people and lesbians. Like, they're, like, kindergartners are, like, 6 years old. Why do you need to know that?
They don't need to know
Most
that.
Most like, average people are going to go, that's weird to say that to people, like, the kids. You know? That's weird to anybody if you do that.
You know? They don't even really care about, like, boy-girl stuff until, like, maybe third grade. Like, maybe.
Yeah.
So the fact that you want to talk to them about that sooner is weird, especially when they're still working on like having like their major motor and fine motor functions like refined. Mm-hmm. So major motor is like skipping and fine motor mm-hmm. is touching all fingers and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they're kind of like, okay, so we're going to prioritize Rainbow Squad over, you know, making sure that they've got full faculties is kind of weird to me.
The idea that I read behind it was they want to make sure kids are being taught not to be bigots. That's the most consistent thing that I've seen through. It's like, what?
Well, that's not their place either. What if they come from a family with like certain religious values, right? Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then they say like, okay, well, we're going to enlighten them. Like back in the, like, probably like in the early like 2000s to 10s, like that was a big no-no, right? Mm-hmm. Like if your kid came in and said like, I have a religious thing against this, they're not going to be like, okay, well, break your religious dogma because I told you to, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's how you get a community of people to suddenly who are very quiet in their houses to leave their houses and come all talk to you. And that's not what you want.
It happened in California. I remember last year when that big Call of Duty streamer was like, just leave. He didn't say anything bad. This is a controversial statement that happened last year. I'm pretty sure I remember that. It was a Call of Duty streamer who was Mark something. He said, leave kids alone. That's it. So I said, mm-hmm. then that was also at the same time because he was reacting to a huge big fight video that ended up happening in LA where like these teachers brought in all these kids after school's over, mm-hmm. this like gay pride thing or whatever. And the religious parents were like, we didn't sign our kids up for that.
Yeah.
So a bunch of people started fighting and people were like, oh, these parents are being mean, all these gay people. No. These gay people took these kids without the parents' permission to learn something that they don't want their kids learning. After hours, so the kids already did their due diligence at school. I was like, come on. Like, at least if you're going to do that, at least ask their permission first. I'll just take it out of their free will.
They're supposed to send home a slip. That's what, and when I was in Arizona, anytime we did something that was slightly, like, close mm-hmm. to that, or, like, even when we had sex ed, and sex ed isn't, like, you know, actually them describing it, like, the, it was super surface level sex mm-hmm. ed. Yeah. Even when we had those people come for 2 weeks, we always had to send home like, you know, a note with a parent signature, you know, where they had to tick boxes and be kind of like, these will be the topics that are discussed. Can you please consent to your child being educated mm-hmm. about this? And if they weren't, they didn't go. Right. And we didn't force them to go. Now, sometimes like, you know, and the reasons for them not going wasn't because they were, you know, lazy or incompetent, but it was like more along the lines of like, I would like to have this conversation with my child. That's a private family matter. I was like, okay, cool, whatever. And sometimes people have like the rebuttal of like, well, there's some families that you just can't trust them. And I'm like, and there's some teachers that you can't trust either, right? Like you can't have an umbrella statement for a whole group of people just because you're wondering about like that 1% outlier. I don't know if you heard about this story. Mm-hmm. I kind of read about it and my retention of these details is really light, but so bear with me. But there was a mother who had her child taken out of school because along the lines of what you're saying, they kept having the child like participate in certain things that the mother was like, no, I'm mm-hmm. not okay with this. Right. And when she pulled her kid out, you know, of school, the school tried to sue her to bring the kid back.
Oh, I remember that one. That one came out around the same time where these are some base kids. The kids were being taught this like gay pride stuff during the gay pride month, which is like, I think June, I think. They were like, I don't want to learn this. They're like, they just literally said, I don't want to learn this. We're not. And they tried to put the gay flag and the kid brought an American flag. I was like, just saying, man, those are some base kids. I will say those are some base parents too. I remember there's a lot of stuff happening. You know, parents are like, the book thing ended up happening last year. Remember it was the big book drama of having like banned material in books and the parents didn't want their kids reading about this like gay explicit material.
They had a second grader actually take the book that was in the library to the school board and had him read the oral sex passage.
I remember that. Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you could tell everybody that was listening was like really uncomfortable, but then like, you know, he finished it and he was like, this was in my school library. Right. Mm-hmm. And that blows my mind too. And I know that it really comes down to like state and, you know, the school mm-hmm. district in question. Cause the one that I did a lot of my time in, like it was very strict, but it was also run by Mormons. Right. Mm-hmm. So it was going to be definitely kind of controlled about what went in and what didn't stay. And it's crazy. And I, like I said, it just all needs to be taken down. Everybody go back to homeschooling children for a little while until we figure this out. Like, I'm sorry for the inconvenience, but, it's just crazy.
There's so much stuff that ends up happening. There's always these constant fights that end up happening. I know everyone saw that one video with that black girl did that one white girl, and that's just, I almost had to just get off the internet for a day because that was just too traumatizing. Crazy. All this was happening in St. Louis. St. Louis is just, St. Louis is also a place where, you know, someone got killed over a Popeye's chicken sandwich. Just saying, if you're at the point where you're getting killed over a fast food item, that's part of where we get peak clown world at that point.
Yeah, definitely.
What did you think about the whole Sweet Baby Ink stuff that has happened so far? Because I don't think about even actually this last time. Have you been that much into like video games your life in general? Okay.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure you've heard about the Sweet Baby Ink stuff. That stuff is just,
that was interesting. My big takeaway is that these DI or DEI organizations like to transition companies into bankruptcy. That was mm-hmm. my takeaway. There was like that had like some layers of joke in there. Please clap. Mm-hmm. But no, it's like, and that goes back to people kind of. There's a thing in literature, it's called a sensitivity reader. And the sensitivity reader, what they do is they literally read your manuscript and look for reasons why people will be upset with it, right? And initially in one of my books, we're like, yeah, we might have a sensitivity reader go in there to see what offensive content is in there. And I was like, I don't think I need that. I know what I wrote was offensive, right? Like I had one particular character who was, you know, on multiple occasions, just like being crass and crude. And it's not because like, I thought that was how that particular group behave. That was just how I decided to write him, right? Mm-hmm. And I had one encounter with an editor on that character. She was like, he's cringe and you need to change him. And I was like, no, this is literally his function. This is what he's supposed to do. Right. And I think it really comes down to who your demographic that you're trying to appeal to is going to be, because what's that one game that just came out? I can't remember. It's like in a beta stage or something like that, but people are upset because it's got sexy looking girls with like titties out, right? And the titties got like good titty graphics, right?
Yeah.
And so you know the game I'm talking about. So in marketing, puppies and sex sell. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of puppy games, but so there's going to be some booby games, right? That's probably just how it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if your main demographic happens to be male between the ages of like, I don't know, 18 to 34, probably having some attractive... Yeah, they're going to want titties. Like, give the people titties. And, mm-hmm. you know, insecure people will come out and be like, well, this isn't realistic, or this isn't attainable, or this is setting up false expectations. And, like, I'm gonna say this nicely. Guys who play video games and see these pixelated women, they know that real women don't look like that, because anytime they want to go see a real woman, they'll go step outside and they'll find one, right? At no point are they under the delusion that a real woman is suddenly going to look like the chick in the video game. Now, if she happens to do that like during sexy time, then they might get like super excited about that. But, you know, let them play their video game, right? Like I play a video game on my cell phone. It's called Nikke, and it's got nothing but butts and tits in there, right? And initially why I played this video game was because I heard it made $10 million in 1 year, right? And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Like, I also would like to know how to make $10 million in 1 year. Yeah. And so I started playing it. And sure enough, I thought, okay, everybody's here for ass and tits. But it's actually, once you get like past like that surface level stuff, like it's got really good plot. Like the mechanics of playing it is actually complicated. Like you can't just put like a group of girls together to go fight like cyber monsters. You actually have to make sure that like they're paired correctly, or you won't survive the mission. Like there's attention to detail in this, right? So you've got the cosmetic of it looking pretty, and then you've got like the technical thing that usually makes people that play like Warhammer really happy. So lots of things. Anyway,
there's because I was having a conversation with my friend last Friday, when I was really late for work and his car ran out of gas on the highway. We were just talking and he was like, man, you know, dudes are just weirdly awfully horny when they see that stuff. They seem to just jerk off and feel better. It's like, no, like, I told you, dude, you're missing the point. When you, people just want to look at good looking, aesthetically built things, you know? Mm-hmm. And if you allow that to happen where they change stuff like that, you're going to change everything else. That's what started most of this stuff, is people going, oh, it's just kind of one thing. It's not going to happen again. It's like, that's the problem too. It's not that people are just weirdly horny. It's just more like, why are you changing it in general? Because the reason, it's not that I would be against the change. It's more like, what's the reason behind the change? Because the reason behind the change is stupid, then just keep it the way it is. If people like it that way, keep it that way. Because most of the reason why they're changing is because they want to like own sexuality for women while making them look unattractive, which makes no sense. I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't understand the appeal of creating a character and saying that this is beautiful when the character looks like she got hit in the face with a shovel. Like, that's sending a different mix-up signal. Now, yeah. I also know that there's the counter of, you know, Vogue and Teen Magazine, and they would purposely like alter the models on the cover so that way they would be more appealing as well. And that would set some women up for like false ideas of like body, and then they would get like a body dysmorphia or develop a bad eating habit because they're trying to attain what they think that the perceived idea of beauty is. And, you know, so it feels like we had one pendulum, you know, that was up here with like what pretty girls were supposed to be, which was graphically altered to be, you know, a little exaggerated in terms of what was pretty. And now we're on the other side where people seem to think being pretty looks like, you know, having a dog head on like, I can't even call it a female body because they don't give most of these women tits either. Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that with this DEI stuff, I'm pretty sure you saw that video with the black lady where she's talking about like not hiring white people. And then in the same video, she says that white people don't do the thing that she's saying that they do, which is really weird. It's like, so white people don't create unsafe environments, because she specified that's not what that she was saying. And she's also not going to hire them because of like microaggressions. So I had to legitimately look up the word microaggressions, and it just feels like a made up word. Just saying that just feels like a made up word, because that is like, bro, no one speaks like this in real life. This thing is, these people just make these videos, or like you'll have the situation happen with the DEI and Kotaku and Sweet Baby Inc. and all that stuff. Don't just get caught red-handed doing something, and they're like, "Well, you know what? We didn't really do that, and you know what? We did it for these reasons because we were actually helping you." It's like, bro, no, like, what is all this? Then you have these weird games journalists come out. And they're like, "Well, you guys really know how hard it is to get games made," and it's like, the fuck they gotta do with anything? You know what that is? That's called deflection. That's basic deflection. Oh, you don't know how hard I have it. Oh, woe is me. It's like, bro, we all have hard lives. Shut the hell up. Talking all this nonsense. Even today with the Acolyte Star Wars trailer, one of the guys is out there being like, if you're going to make jokes at the expense of women, I had to stop reading it. And I was like, I'm done reading those posts. They're just so cringe. He literally put in his tweet, the first sentence, if you have to make jokes at the expense of women, you need to look in the mirror. And it's like, you can't make jokes about girls anymore? We're done. Your opinion means nothing. I'm sorry. Even if I disagree with you, I'd still somewhat read your opinion. Be like, oh, that's... Like I say, no, I'm not doing that. No more of that. Maybe we gotta realize to ourselves, life opinions are just not good. Whether you hear them or don't hear them, these guys are just stupid.
Well, I mean, and that also kind of, like, is kind of talking about, like, how thin people's skin is right now. So I usually tell folks that when you have to be on the internet, be a personality on the internet, you have to have a rhino skin at some point, because everybody's going to come out of the woodwork and have an opinion about what you say, do, whether it be actually done or perceived or projected, right? And when you're talking about microaggressions, we talked about that when I was going through psychology. So that was what my master's was in. And we talked about microaggressions. And when they explained it to me, I was like, oh, it's being passive aggressive. Right. And when I would encounter somebody that was being passive aggressive, I'd say, like, hey, you don't have to be a little bitch right now. Right. Like, that was, you know, just tackle it for what it is. But because we keep trying to put like a lot of technical words on human behavior, it's like we're trying to build up like a distance so that way we can feel superior in the vernacular that we use when we're trying to encounter these difficult people. And my thing is, like, if somebody wants to come out and say like a really stupid thing, let them do it, because then I'm going to know that they're a dumbass and I can stay away from them, right? telling folks what they can and can't say is never going to go well, especially when it borders into like, well, you shouldn't think that way. It's like, okay, first off, don't go into my head and tell me exactly what to think. Because right now, I just want you to know I'm not having good thoughts about you. but that one situation that you described about, you know, the employee who said that they would not hire Caucasians, like, you know, that's, I know that sounds weird, but that's called segregation. And, you know,
yeah, pretty sure we abolished that a long time ago. It's like we did all this work to abolish that, and these people are literally trying to bring that back. Meanwhile, not even understanding, because you know these guys don't read comics. Guys, Black Panther was not created by a black guy. Just so you know that. I know he's very popular now because, you know, people see movies and they think that this is the first time this character's ever existed with, like, the nephews or the nieces, as they call the young kids nowadays. Black Panther was created by a Jewish guy, okay? Okay, so what people to know working on this game that the people that, just because they're black working on Black Panther, that just doesn't mean you understand Black Panther because you're black. Just putting it out there. Because, you know, these guys did watch this stuff. The lady, what's her name? Alyssa Mercante got caught watching Hypnotic Stream. That comment that she guys talking about, because people know that little Iron Man thumbnail, that's me. That's my backup YouTube account. That's me. Okay. She blurred my name out. She was watching his. I just said she looked pretty. I was being a little facetious there. You know, like, you know, she has a weird punk rocker look to her. So I was like, you know what? These girls look kind of cute sometimes. I'm not really into that kind of girl. But you know what? If we're at a bar and she kind of hit me up, who knows what happened? I just said she looked good. That's it. You can't even compliment women like that. I just said she looked good. That's all I said.
And that's funny because most women, even though they don't want to say it, they do actually want to be complimented on looking nice. So any woman that says, no, I don't need a man to say I look nice, like, you're... I mean, sorry. I'm on your side of the fence. I know exactly what you want.
Yeah, like, if these people say you don't watch yourself, she got caught red-handed watching. Because to get that forward to that stream, either you fast-forwarded the entire, because on YouTube you can fast-forward the stream, or you're watching. Just saying. I don't get why people think just because they've now discovered something that means that it was always like this and was created by this person of this race. It's like, God, gaming industry is just so trash. Mm-hmm. Like, Warner Brothers went out of their way to be like, hey, Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League, failed. We did not like, the expectations we had for it did not meet up. Literally what the company representative said in one of those meetings they have. People went, you know what? If you hate it, you hate diversity. And it's like, what? Huh?
Yeah, that kind of hate marketing, because when you don't like something, like, so you have to either really like something or really hate it to talk about it, right?
And that's mostly kind of how it is, yeah.
Yeah, and so a lot of times people will talk about things that they hate more than they do than when they like something. And I have shamelessly built up on that, because every time somebody decides to put me under fire on Twitter for whatever reason, I start marketing my books and I'm like, hey, since you guys are paying attention to me, can you buy my shit, right? And I think for a while they thought that they were in the right, and that if they stood their ground and pushed back against, like, the bigots and stuff like that, that eventually, you know, people would calm down and see the light. But when they did that, they alienated their audience, right?
Like, that's another thing is, how would they assume that just hiring a group of just black people is going to produce a better game with a black character? It's like, because there was that other guy, that other black guy that came out and was like, games do this and games do that and games do this. Well, he's even more unqualified because he hasn't even worked in the gaming industry. Remember, guys, it's how young people work now. A random person could just come on to say their opinion about given how wrong or right it might be to someone. They themselves have no credentials to working in the gaming industry, but they're going to tell you how it works. You find that weird? You know, and I get it. We all do the same thing, because we're just saying, I never said I work for these companies. I'm just telling you my opinion from, like, my point of view of what I see the situation is. These people are talking affirmatively, like, they understand what's going on, while also not being a part of it, while agreeing with them. And it's like, you don't even know what their consulting stuff is.
Yeah, so outside of that group that you're talking about, Hypnotic actually was talking about a group that did a presentation. I think it was last night. Yeah, it was, because I watched the replay this morning. And it was these two women that were talking about bad stuff in games. We'll say it that way. I don't want to throw out all the fun words. And you could take a look at these two women who are supposed to be experts about like this field of gaming. And you could tell when they were talking about it that they don't play games, right? Like I hate saying it. Gamers get like have a look on their eyes. Like they have got a little bit of shark eye because they're always like ready to like lunge at something. Right.
Right.
But you know, they didn't have that. And then on top of that, they were trying to make a correlation between two games that had nothing in common with each other than like, they have like these elements in there. It's like, no, one's a sim and one is like literally a person, like first person shooter. Like they have nothing in common with each other except the fact that a person will play it, right? And if that's going to be the only commonality that a game has, then it's not going to be the fact that, you know, by playing these games, we are promoting said behavior. It's going to be sometimes people with this behavior will play these games, right? But they didn't want to make that deduction. They were just like, no, video games cause this behavior. And it was like, I thought you had a doctorate, like, but apparently you don't.
That thing that you just said there, it's been proven that video games don't do what people think they do. So let's say if you play Call of Duty and you play Call of Duty, just any of them, doesn't matter. Let's say because people have PS5s now and Xbox, the new Call of Duty games. Let's say your chick played that. It's actually been proven scientifically. If they play that, that's not going to make them a serial killer. It's been proven more than enough times to show that. People that are just weird and do that violent shit are just weird, violent people. The video game had nothing to do with it. It wasn't even going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back. It just has no direct, you know, one-to-one conversion of making this person insane.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that they even think that still to this day is like, we debunked that like ages ago. That's been a non-thing forever.
And they don't want to let go of that either. And that's the thing that drives me crazy. Like when I was playing Pal World, when I was no-lifing it on launch, even though it was in beta, I don't care. You know, when I was playing with my friends, like nighttime was when I would go out with my friends and I would share my screen and they would watch me like go find like those groups of other humans and like headshot them while they were sleeping so I could steal their shit. Right. And, you know, saying that out loud sounds like a terrible thing, but like I've got a newsflash for you. It's not going to leave the video game. And part of the reason I did it was because killing them while they were asleep made it a lot easier to take their stuff. Right.
That's true. Yeah. And then, you know, the whole conservatives and not liking video games. I mean, that's been a thing forever, honestly. I mean, I'll say it because that whole Matt Walsh thing happened. I've had people like that in my life. Those people generally look at playing video games or anime or all in that stuff that we would probably like. They look at it as like, you're a loser if you do that stuff. There's people, now I'm not saying, you're entitled to your own opinion. There's people that think that. Like, have you guys ever wondered why, like, comic book movies aren't nominated for Academy Awards? It's not because some of them aren't even, like, that good or even could get wins for like best makeup or maybe like best special effects. The older people in charge legitimately think of it as a, what's the best word I could say? Like they'll down upon the medium just in general. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll do anything but acknowledge its success. Have you guys noticed that only like a few movies from superheroes ever that have won awards, like Suicide Squad? Well, I mean, we shouldn't have won anything, but it won for like best makeup. The Dark Knight won for something, and I think Black Panther, I think maybe have won. But guys, there's a reason why. I could just lashed all that onto Matt Walsh. Unfair to him. A lot of people think that. A lot of people think if you watch anime, you're a loser. A lot of people think if you play video games, you're a weirdo. It's just how it is, you know?
Well, yeah. And like the thing about like nominations for movies is that those are political as well, right? Like that's been talked about by actors for a very long time. Like
they'll only say it.
Yeah, like Leonardo DiCaprio should have gotten like his award like forever ago, but he just wasn't, you know. He wasn't.
They wanted him to put in the work, as they would probably say. It's like, Will Smith. He should have won for Pursuit of Happiness that year. Pursuit of Happiness is a great movie. No, you know, he's got to wait until he assaults another black man on stage to get his Academy Award. I guess they waited for the right moment, I guess.
Yeah, I remember when somebody, you know, when Matt Walsh actually did watch an anime, and I watched the one he watched, and I was like, fuck. And the reason I said that was, first off, it was One Punch Man. I think it's great. I love it. But the reason that I love it so much is because I'm also very familiar with, you know, the Dragon Ball Z and the power-ups and all the tropes that come with that. And so this well-meaning guy wanted Matt Walsh to watch this parody of like an established genre, and he didn't have any context for it at all. So like, even though there was like some good like pivots and you know, shifting of audience expectations, because he walked in there not really knowing anything or wanting to know anything about it, like all the humor was like completely lost on him. So I was like, so yeah. But that mindset about video games and TV shows, that's actually one that's shared with Buddhism as well. But the really ironic thing is that there are some monks that after they've been like meditating all day, when they go back to like, you know, their sleeping area, they'll like pull out cell phones and play like Angry Birds.
They'll do it. Oh, God. Like, I think gamers can be a little weird. Like, nerd people can be very weird. They're, like, socially retarded in a lot of things, actually. Like, I'm pretty sure you've heard of this controversy that ended up happening with, like, Super Smash Brothers, where, like, players don't shower. That's a thing, and not just Super Smash Brothers in general. That's a thing in a lot of nerd movies.
I've gone to conventions.
Yeah, like, I don't know where people... Like, I can agree with Jeremy on a lot of things, but we gotta be real. Nerds are weird people. Like, just in general. Nerds are pretty odd. Like, some of them can't even make basic conversation.
Well, I mean, people are scary, right? Yeah. Like, and putting yourself out there and going through social situations, it's not everybody's cup of tea. Like, you know, I have no people days as well, but I also know how to people on occasion. I also have, like, an extensive education in how to, like, talk and interact with people. So I get, like, a slight, like, you know, kind of edge up on that. But, you know, to the typical guy that usually just kind of, like, or gal or, you know, whatever they identify as, I don't know anymore, you know, who wants to pass their time in a video game, and then they try and talk to somebody who's not into like that game or genre or anything else like that, like they're going to come off as socially awkward because this thing that they really love and enjoy, like nobody else is going to get it, right?
Yeah.
It's like when I met with the Soska sisters and they were talking to me about WWE, and I was like, I'm freaking retarded because I don't understand anything that you're saying.
I don't understand
right
it either.
Like, yeah, you're speaking English and you're very excited. I see it, but I don't get it. So.
Yeah, that's the thing. Thing is, I'm pretty sure because you said you've been to conventions. I've been to a few Evos. They're glorified conventions, to be honest here. Nerd people generally, like, this happens in a lot of the Yu-Gi community too. A lot of people's entire life personality revolves around that thing. That's the reason why nerds are weird to people. And I fully get it with the other side. I fully understand it. Like, if someone's only thing that they've ever attributed in life is just that, that's pretty odd. I will say that is pretty odd to a person who just isn't into that. You know, and I think some nerds, what they could do better is if you want more people to be in your communities, you're gonna have to probably not be an asshole. A lot of them start thinking that they're Seto Kaiba from Yu-Gi-Oh when they're actually in reality just fucking Krillin from Dragon Ball Z. You know, yeah. A lot of them talk down to people when it's like, you know, you're the weird one here with no girlfriends and no life and no money, right? There's some levels here with that, you know? I think, you know, but I can understand where nerds are coming from because nerd communities. What the fuck? I just knocked over my beer.
Don't lose that. It's important.
Like, have you noticed when you like this stuff, people just randomly attack it? They're like, well, you like fucking anime. And it's like, what do you like? Fishing? It's just people just unneedlessly throw insults towards people's hobbies that are just. I don't understand. What is wrong with someone being into video games? I'd rather you be into video games and have your whole life dedicated around that than do drugs. I'm sorry. Or do meth or whatever people do nowadays.
It might be cheaper. It might not be. It depends on the game and the platform.
Yeah, yeah. If your kid was addicted to playing Call of Duty, that's probably better than fucking being on drugs.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Eventually he's going to grow out of it because, you know, as people grow, they like new things. They get attached to new things. It just happens in life. I was like, if we're having a problem with people being addicted to video games, we're losing sense of life. It's like, sometimes that's the enjoyment you get. Like, you know, you get off work or whenever you do your workouts, you come home, you're like, you want to sit down and play a couple games of Power World. Like, I'm just trying to relax, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's whatever people want to do to decompress. I think media has done a really good job of kind of demonizing video games, not just in, like, the news, but, like, in dramatized shows. So I'll always remember there was a couple of, like, CSI shows and Law and Order where there's always like the obligatory, you know, video game bad episode where they talk about like a group of people who got really into a game and decided to reenact it outside. And, you know, I'm always like watching this and my first question is like, where are these parents at? Like, did you really just let your child be raised by the television? Like what's going on here? Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's all people need to like build like a surface impression of something. And again, we go circle back to the one comment that we had like way, I think earlier on in this interview about the, you know, the lacking of due diligence, right? And, you know, what's your kid doing? What are they playing? Is it something that you want them to be exposed to? And if so, how long do you want them to be, you know, playing this? And when I was growing up, my parents really did not want me to play video games because they were like, that's a child activity, right? Like that was their perception of it. And they're like, you have to grow out of it. And my funny moment was when I walked up into my dad's home office and I saw him on a game and he was playing some kind of, I think it was like World of Warcraft, like, or just mm-hmm. Warcraft, like that first one. And so I was like, Dad, is that a game? And he was like, do as I say, not as I do. Right. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so it's just, you know, there's that social pressure that we're supposed to not do this thing, but there's also like that pushback that's going on right now because it's more socially acceptable for people to want to play games. In fact, they found out that more people are playing games now than they probably have in like since they started recording the data. And 2020 is responsible for that because people didn't have anything to do. So what did they do? They got a game to pass time with.
Oh, and the other thing I wanted to bring up because this was big for you, happened a few last month because we're in March, was MegaCon. You guys went to MegaCon 2024 and how was that experience? Because Eric said it was absolutely great. I know you talked about it on Twitter. The whole team was talking about it.
Oh, it was wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was wonderful. Like, I mean, you had like the occasional like bro that would walk by with like the cell phone to like record the booth, right? Like that happened. Okay. Yeah. And I'm pretty confident.
Yeah. Twitter engagement to say like, oh, there's no fans here. Even though you can clearly see there's a bunch of people in the booth waiting to talk to Eric, but you know, whatever delusions people want to make up for themselves. You know?
Yeah, but like in the 4 days that I was there, I think I actually ran into one detractor. And the only reason I think he was a detractor is because when he was trying to talk about ISOM, he kept spelling the whole thing out. And so like, you know, towards the end of his talking, I was like, do you want to buy something or do you want to go? And he was like, I think I'm gonna go. And I was like, okay, you have a good day. Like, you know, get out. But everybody that actually showed up to like the booth to come and talk to us, they're all such wonderful, great people. Like I actually made friends while I was there. And like, at one point I was like, give me your contact info. Cause I want to, you know, talk with you more like after this. And, like I was actually really grateful that Kara and I brought our husbands with us because not that I'm saying that, you know, we're not strong, independent women, but there were definitely like a couple of times when we had like just a horde of people there where we were like, we need help. Like we did not expect so many people to show up. Mm-hmm. And it was just so good. It really was. Like I really did not have like a bad experience with anybody while I was there. Everybody was kind. They were very patient. They were excited to be there. I think my favorite part was, it was actually, so we had like time slots at the booth, right? And the twins always had a line at some point. There was like, I think maybe like one or two times when like the line dissipated, but even those people would like come back. But anyway, so the twins were done but they still had like four people that were waiting for like that wanted to talk to them. So they just went out and like made like a circle on the floor in front of the area. And they just had like a circle time with like the people that wanted to hang out with them. And they talked with them for like a whole hour. I thought that was really fun.
Because the lines of people that you had, it just shows the impact that just reverse has had on people or the amount of interest is in what you guys are doing. Because the other thing to bring up to people is it's one thing to do this stuff online and to crowdfund and do all that stuff. But when I went to just Barnes & Noble's a month back because I had to get a new terabyte for my computer because I need more space on it to download these episodes and throw them up on Spotify, you tell like the conversation there, like when you see the books actually made and they're there in front of you, just feels different. You know, like, this is great for what it is, but to be able to go and see and interact with people that are similar mindsets and talk and they love what you love and you can have different stories to converge on about how you got into the same thing, it's just way different, you know? What I also like that has come to the point, you know, like back in the day for like Comic Cons, like Hollywood would come and they put all these big old giant trailers and you have all the cast and crew there doing the little interview. I like that people on this side of the internet can have that. So like Eric and Jeremy and Ryan can be on a panel like the celebrities do and they can reveal something on screen. You could essentially have what they have, but just in your own way that you built up of your own audience, which I think is really cool, you know? Because when you did the horse race, the crowd went pretty crazy for us. Like they're really digging it. You could bring your own announcements to these cons. And they invited you guys to be on, so that's great also too.
Yeah, we even had like a surprise panel that Eric went on. I remember when they emailed and like, hey, I know it's a long shot, but does Eric want to do it? And I was like, well, Eric's just gonna go. Like that's literally how like the decision was made. I was like, you're gonna go. I'm sorry. and that went really well also because he was basically he was on a panel for people that wanted to be indie creators and put out their work and stuff like that. So he was 100% qualified to be there because he's encountered so many different hurdles and things he's had to overcome. Yeah. But I think, you know what, there was one bad thing about MegaCon and I can't lie about it. That food court food was terrible. Like it was complete trash.
It always is, isn't it? Yeah.
It was so bad. Mm-hmm. Like, at one point, I was like, I'd rather starve than eat this corn dog. Like, it was just so terrible. Like, this is bad.
No, yeah. I've been to Evos and things of that nature. Food court food is literally too overpriced, and it tastes like shit.
Honestly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It tastes so bad.
Yeah. And, like, there was one place that was selling coffee, and I drank it. I was like, this is mud. not that I want to cut it short, but I do have to vamoose in about 8 minutes.
No, it's fine. That's fine. Mm-hmm. No worries. So what was it like talking to Kara? Because I forgot, your name is Kara. Her name is Kara. It's just too many sounding words around here. How was it finally meeting her and interacting with her, actually?
You know, that actually wasn't our first time. That was our third time, because every time that we've had a release or a fulfillment, we usually fly her out to come to location. But Kara's great. I really like Kara. She's got good energy. She's got a great work mindset when it comes to getting stuff done. And she knows that when something has to get done, it's like, okay, well, we're just going to buckle down until it gets figured out. Right. Mm-hmm. And she's great tag teaming as well. So getting into the con was a bit of a journey for us, because the information that we were supposed to have didn't arrive to us in a timely manner, you know, for whatever reason. And, you know, Kara and I were I had the van, she had the location, we're tag teaming until we could finally connect back there and start uploading everything. And she's definitely got a solid mindset when it comes to if this has to get done, then we stay until it gets done. And she no relenting, no giving up. She's just she's there until the very end. So that's always great.
Cause the booth that I saw, I was like, man, that looks really good. It puts that surreal feeling. It's like, man, this is actually a legit thing that people enjoy, you know?
Yeah, no, that was the booth design was all her. The only thing I did was when she was pick up this heavy box. So I would pick up the box and put it wherever she told me to. But the design of the booth, that was all her. And I told her that that was going to be her big thing, because she's worked at conventions before and she's worked in various spaces. So I knew she would have a better idea of how to set things up. And even while we were there, we still had to kind of play with it a little bit, so that way we could easily get to shirts and stuff like that. So that was, you know, we had some learning going on, but she was definitely the more qualified one to figure out the space.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was glad you had all that success at MegaCon. I hope it was great. You know, so many panels and stuff. Maybe one day you'll be on the panel and you could tell people all about so many things. Wouldn't you be super nervous to be talking to that many people?
I mean, I've done public speaking before. It's usually been more in a TED Talk kind of thing, you know, when I have to give presentations or discuss topics of that nature. I'd probably be nervous. I don't know why I would be on a panel, though. Unless somebody wants to talk about the psychological trauma that a character can go through. So.
And the last two things I'll ask you before you have to head out, which is, you got any big plans for yourself or your YouTube channel coming up this year in 2024?
I'm trying to do more interviews on my channel. I've been reaching out to various people who work both in game industry and television and film, and I've asked if they would grace me with an hour of their time to kind of share some nuggets of wisdom from them to, you know, little tiny creators that are just trying to figure stuff out for the first time. So and I only do it once a month, because that's how many spoons I have to give to that project. But Blaine Pardo was my first interviewee. He was really fantastic, and I was so gracious that he made time for me. And then I abused my power, and I had the Sasuke sisters come on for my last one, and they were absolutely bomb. I loved having them there. And then I do have somebody who's lined up for this month. I haven't announced them yet, but this is an indie creator who's also worked for a couple of Cherno magazine online websites as well. So I'm hoping to tickle his brain kind of with how that looks, because I think there's some misconceptions on that field that he could probably clarify. So I'm kind of looking forward to that talk.
All right. And last thing, any shout outs you want to give to anyone in particular? Anything else you want to say before we head out?
My dad. No, that's something.
I think at the Academy for this award.
Yeah, my dad. So probably the shout outs that I would give today are going to be for Brandon for working very hard. I'm happy that he's finally taking a day off here soon. I'm going to give a shout out to Alex, because he's tackling the big Ripperson stuff that we have going on right now. So he's really digging through that and making it work. I'm going to go ahead and also give a shout out to Andrew, who's been working nonstop on a lot of the edits that we have for pending projects that are in the works right now. Mm-hmm. I also want to give a shout out to Marcos, because Marcos is like working like a machine to get like a whole bunch of like those custom images that are out right now. And let's see, who am I missing? I want to give another shout out to Kanan White, because Kanan White is a delightful human being and a wonderful individual. And I hope more people get to see like that goodness in him, because he's been like such a complete pleasure to work with so far.
Hmm. Yep. So thank you for coming on once again. Mm-hmm. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this episode of the Iron Man podcast. And make sure you guys have a great week coming up. Carol's going to go write some more romance fantasies about a hot, buff guy with a six pack, you know, and he can't get the girl.
That because hair flowing in the wind, right?
He's always going to be perfect. You know, his eyes always match up with the right part of the book. You know, he's got the ripped muscles.
But they're going to fight because they don't butter their toast the right way. That's where the conflict is. That's how they fight.
Oh, God.
I'm going to put that in a book one day.
We'll see you guys later. Have a great day, everybody. Peace.